In this, our second and final presentation for Chapter 17, Financial Ratio Analysis, we will burn through the many other ratios that we want to introduce you to. We're not going to spend much time on any one ratio as we did in the previous presentation with price to earnings ratio, the most widely quoted stock market statistic. But we'll find, as we've already discussed, that each of these ratios has their place in our attempt to create a more well-rounded, complete picture of our potential investments. And as we've said over and over again, we don't just use one statistic, one financial ratio, to make or break our decision to buy or sell an investment. We create a stew, if that speaks to you, of information. So our first ratios will be the profitability ratios. And these are financial ratios that measure a firm's returns by relating profits to sales, profits to assets, profits to equity. So the five we're going to take a look at are net profit margin, gross margin, operating margin, return on assets, and return on equity, the last two being very popular. And as it says at the bottom, the profitability ratios allow one to measure the ability of a firm to earn an adequate return on sales, total assets, and invested capital. Why is a business in business? To make money. So slide 21. Let's take a look at the net profit margin, or the after-tax profit margin. Now, it may help for you to have the formula sheet from Chapter 17 and the balance sheet and the income statement readily available. We're going to bounce back and forth a few times, not too often, because I don't know how well that you can actually see them, especially if you're looking at this on your cell phone. But you'll get the picture, get the method very quickly. It's not that hard, these financial ratios. So the net profit margin is the rate of profit being earned from earnings after expenses and taxes. We take the net income and divide that by the total revenue. Remember the net income, the bottom line, and the total revenue is the top line, right? And it the higher the better, obviously, and it varies greatly from industry to industry. So we were looking at four. So we're going to take a look at the income statement. So let's go grab the income statement here, and we'll go down to the bottom because that's the first number. The net income is $7,602, right? $7 billion, $602 million, and the total revenue is $156,776. You got those two numbers? Make sense? So if we take the $7,602 and divide it by the $156,776, I've already got my cheat sheet here. And that tells me that it's 4.85%. Is that a good number? I don't know. We have to take a look at not only Ford, but we also have to take a look at their competitors. We have to see if that's a respectable number within that industry. And if it's way off base from the competitors, then that's a sign that we need to do more research about why. Why is it? Is it an anomaly? Is it just something that's temporary? Or is it a serious failing or a benefit or advantage of that company? Does that make sense? I hope so. So you'll find that the next ones are very, very similar. The gross margin uses the gross profit over the total revenue. And how is that different? Well, instead of using the bottom line, we're going to use this line right here, gross profit. We'll take the gross profit and divide that by the total revenue. And if you do that, 16,340 divided by the 156,776, you get 10.5%, 10.42%. Again, you know, is that a good number? I don't know. We've got to go take a look at their competitors and see how they compare to Ford. And we're going to find that the next one is basically the same idea, except we use the operating income. So instead of the net income, instead of the gross income, we use the operating income to create the operating margin, the rate of profit being earned from net income, adjusting for any non-cash items. And, yep, you guessed it, the higher the better. It varies greatly from industry to industry, so when we are looking at a specific company, we always need to look at its competitors within the industry. When we find a company that is atypical of its competitors in an industry, it is a signal that we have more investigative work to do. Okay, you want to do that one real fast? Okay, let's go back to the income statement, and we take the operating income, 4813, you can ignore the last three zeros, divided by the total revenue, 156,776, and I got about 3%, 3.07%. Okay, let's continue. Rip it. Slide 24, the return on assets. Now, this measures how profitable a company is relative to its total assets, as opposed to the revenue. And where are the assets? Right, on the balance sheet. So we have to go to both the income statement to get the net income and go to the balance sheet to get the total assets. The return on assets looks at the amount of resources a company needs to support operations. It reveals how effective the company is in generating profits from the assets it has available. And the higher, of course, the better. So in this case, we would run to the income statement to get the net income, and that's the, remember, that's the bottom line number, 7602. And then we would run to the balance sheet to get the total assets, 257,808. And that gives us 2.95. Which sounds kind of low, but I'm betting that if you go look at other car companies, you're going to see very similar numbers. Why? Because cars are very difficult to build. You need a lot of assets to build a car. You just don't do it in your backyard, right? So we're looking at 2.95% for Ford. Now, watch what happens when we change from return on assets to return on equity. This is slide 25. And this is a measure of the overall profitability of a company in relation to the shareholders' equity. In other words, how much of our money, of our assets, the owners of the company, did it take to generate that income? Because return on equity uses stockholders' equity instead of total assets for the denominator, the return on equity, sometimes called return on investment, is sensitive to the amount of debt a company is carrying. Specifically, if a company carries a great amount of debt, return on equity will be much larger than return on assets. And why is that? Well, there's an old saying in the industry, both, you know, in all finance and real estate industry and investments. You want to use other people's money to make your money. You're using other people's money, debt, to make your money, your income. And some investors think this is a great thing. Obviously, in the real estate world, that's how you live and breathe. But others, yours truly being one of them, are worried about the possible negative consequences of too much debt. And what are the possible negative consequences of too much debt? Bankruptcy, indeed. And it turns out that car companies are heavily in debt because it takes a lot of money to get from point A to point B. So now, if instead, let's bounce to the balance sheet here, If instead of using the total assets, we go down and just use the stockholders' equity, which is a whole lot less than the total assets, 34,890, then our return on equity is almost 22%. You see the difference between return on assets and return on equity? We have, or Ford, has $222 billion, almost $223 billion in liabilities. So we're using a whole lot of other people's money to make our money. And is that typical of car companies? Oh, yeah. Check out their competitors. It is very typical. So we see a return on equity that is much higher, almost 22%, compared to the return on assets, which is almost 3%. Make sense? And again, we compare companies in the same industry and look for anomalies as a way to coax out more information about the company that we're interested in investing in. Okay, so those were the profitability ratios. Now let's turn our attention to liquidity ratios. And these are concerned with the firm's ability to meet its day-to-day operating expenses and satisfy its short-term obligations as they come due. Because if you don't pay your employees, if you don't pay your vendors who are supplying the parts, they have this nasty habit of just going away and ignoring you. So we need to have current assets, as the accountants like to use, sufficient to meet our current liabilities. And the most popular ratio is the current ratio, which is just a simple calculation, current assets to current liabilities. The next one is the one strange interloper in our huge list of financial ratios. It's not a ratio. It's basically the current ratio in absolute dollar terms. We'll see that in a bit. And then the acid test ratio. What a great name, right? Well, it's the current ratio, but what we do is we remove the inventory, and we'll see why in just a minute. So let's take a look at the current ratio on slide 27. Again, a very simple calculation. You take the current assets and you divide it by the current liabilities. The current ratio is a good indicator of how stable a company is. Anything over 1 is normally considered acceptable. Why? Very simple, because if you have enough current assets to meet your current liabilities, you're not going to get hauled off into bankruptcy court. If your current assets equal or exceed your current liabilities, you should be able to satisfy your short-term obligations without any problems. Obviously, the greater the number is, the better. But then you get into these tech companies that have just cash coming out of their ears. I mean, they have tons, billions of dollars in cash, and their current ratios are just insane. I mean, there was a time there, I forget what it was, not 2002, 2003, when Microsoft had a current asset in the hundreds. They were just, I mean, how many times can they rewrite Word? And then every time they do, they make it worse, right? And so they finally said, okay, we'll pay some dividends. And then since then, they've been paying pretty darn good dividends. And that's happening across the tech world. So let's run over to the balance sheet and take a look at our current assets. And here's our current assets, almost $116 billion, 115,902. And then run down to our current liabilities, $94,600. And it turns out that, you know, Ford has plenty of assets. The current ratio is 1.225, which means, hey, they're fine. They can meet their day-to-day obligations. Now, the next one is, as I said, the one oddball here, slide 28. It's the net working capital, the absolute dollar measure of liquidity. And we take our current assets and subtract them from the current liabilities. Huh? It's not a ratio. Right, it's not a ratio. It's, let's read together. The net working capital is the current ratio in dollar terms. If the current ratio is greater than 1, then the net working capital will be positive. In other words, you have more assets than you have liabilities. If it's less than 1, the net working capital will be negative, right? And obviously, the higher the net working capital, the better. And as we have at the bottom of the screen here, this statistic is less popular than the current ratio. And it's really not a ratio. It is often discussed. It's just how many dollars you have above and beyond in assets than liabilities. So it's the absolute dollar measure. And so we know from just looking at the balance sheet, let's go back to it again, that Ford has a lot of money, folks. If you subtract the $115,900 minus the $94,600, you get what? Almost $20 billion? Yeah, so yeah, Ford's sitting pretty, folks. They have got a lot of assets that they can use to keep the company afloat. Now, slide 29, the acid test ratio. What a great name, right? Sometimes called the quick ratio. And it is a more stringent, a more strict version of the current ratio. And it's essentially the same, except what we do is we pull out the inventory. Now, here's the formula. You take the cash and the accounts receivable and the short-term investments and the other current assets. But really, it's a whole lot easier to just take the total current assets and subtract inventory. That's a whole lot easier, folks. But either way, you're going to get the same number. And unlike the current ratio, the acid test ratio excludes inventory. You see, this ratio measures the ability of the company to meet its short-term obligations, even if its current inventory becomes obsolete or undesirable, and hence difficult or impossible to be turned into cash. And again, anything greater than 1 is considered adequate. Now, it also varies from industry to industry, because certain things like cars, I mean, they don't go obsolete. I mean, sure, they have to discount last year's models, but they don't become worthless. Unlike what happens in the technology world, where last year's computers are, oof, we don't want them. Yes, so it depends on the industry. This is where Dell was, not Dell wasn't the only one, but Dell really pioneered the idea of what's called just-in-time manufacturing, because they didn't want any computers lying around the factory that nobody wanted. So they would design the computers, and then they wouldn't build any until they got orders. You see? Okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense from a computer company's standpoint. Because you don't have any last year's models lying around, whereas Ford and GM, they can sell last year's models. So if we do the calculation here, let's go back to the balance sheet. We take the current assets, and again, it's easier just to subtract out the inventory. Yeah, exactly. And so that's about $10 billion less than what our current assets are. We take out the inventory and divide that by the current you divide that by the current liabilities, and you get still a number over 1. I get 1.117. That's my cheat sheet over here. You can't see it, but I can. Does that make sense? Do it. Make sure I'm not making a mistake. Yeah, I make mistakes too. I make a lot of mistakes, dear students. So keep me on my toes. So those were the liquidity ratios. You're getting the idea of this, right? Yeah, well, let's go through it anyway. You can stop right now, and you don't have to listen to the rest of this, or you can say, let's continue, but you get the ideas. These ratios are very simple to calculate, and each one shows a different piece of the puzzle. Activity ratios, also called efficiency ratios. These are financial ratios that are used to measure how well a firm is managing its assets. And they're often discussed as turnovers. How often do we turn over our accounts receivable? How often do we turn over our inventory? How often do we turn over our total assets? These data ratios use data from both the balance sheet and the income statement. Activity ratios measure a firm's ability to convert different accounts within their balance sheets into cash or sales. Companies will try to turn their production into cash or sales as fast as possible because this will generally lead to higher revenues. In other words, get this stuff out the door. Exactly. So let's take a look at the accounts receivable turnover. Now, what's accounts receivable? You accounting fans know what that is. Money that is owed to us. In the business world, it is very typical for you to sell your products to your customers and not receive the cash right away. It's just, that's how it's done. And so that's called accounts receivable. And of course, the higher the number, the better. We're going to take our total revenue and divide it by the accounts receivable. It indicates the return a company is getting from its investments in accounts receivable. By maintaining accounts receivable, firms are indirectly extending interest-free loans to their clients. A high ratio implies that the company operates either on a cash basis or its extension of credit and collection of accounts receivable is efficient. A low ratio implies that the company should reassess its credit policies in order to ensure the timely collection of imparted credit that's not earning any interest for your firm. Or that just may be the way the industry operates. For example, defense. Now, I haven't worked in the defense industry for a long time, dear students, but my understanding is that it's changed somewhat. But if you're a defense contractor and you're building an aircraft carrier or fighter jets or tanks or whatever, Uncle Sam will get around to paying you. Don't worry. I mean, he's not going to stiff you, but he sure does take his good old sweet time doing it. This is fine for huge companies that have plenty of resources, but the smaller companies were really hurting. They were clamoring, please, you know, pay us. We got to make our payroll. And so my understanding is that it's changed somewhat. The procurement and payment systems of the Defense Department have been modernized. But still, that was just, you knew that going in. You knew that Uncle Sam is going to take his good old sweet time in paying us, and we better be ready to do business with him in that respect. Slide number 32, inventory turnover. Same idea, but instead of using accounts receivable, we're using inventory. The higher the number, the less time an item spends in inventory, and the better the return the company is able to earn from funds tied up in inventory. As with all these ratios, we must compare it to the industry. A low turnover implies poor sales and therefore excess inventory. A high ratio implies either strong sales or ineffective inventory buying and maintenance. High inventory levels are unhealthy because they represent an investment with a rate of return of zero. And it also opens the company up to trouble in the case of falling prices or obsolete products. But herein lies the dilemma that, say, a car dealer has. You can't get people on the lots to look at cars unless you have a lot of cars. But you don't want to have a lot of cars because they're sitting there not making you any money. You understand? That's the dilemma. You have to have enough cars to attract people onto the lot, but then you don't want too many because it's costing you money to have these cars sitting on the lot. We go into a store, we go into a supermarket or a drugstore, and we think that everything is there all the time. No, of course not. I mean, they're always stocking the shelves, and the milk is flying off the shelves, and the diapers and other things, and certain things sit around for a while, and sometimes they sit around for a long while. But if we do this activity ratio for Ford, we take the total revenue, which again is off the income statement, and the inventory, which is off the balance sheet, and I'll let you can do that now, right? Yeah. And what do I get? I get 15.255, which means that Ford is turning over their inventory about 15 times a year, right? They're more than once a month, more than every 3 weeks or so, every 3 weeks or so, 3 or 4 weeks, they are turning over their inventory, which, again, we need to look at the rest of the industry to see if that's efficient or that's just average or inefficient. Cool. Okay, next one is the total asset turnover, which is same idea. We take our total revenue and divide it by our total assets. This total asset turnover ratio measures the firm's efficiency at using assets to support sales and revenue. The higher the number, the better. Companies with low profit margins tend to have high asset turnover. Those with high profit margins tend to have low asset turnover. In other words, if you're selling milk, right, you don't get a whole lot of revenue from every gallon of milk that you sell, but boy, don't you sell a lot of gallons of milk. That's the idea. And it's pretty low in the case of cars. Why? Because we have huge amounts of assets. So you do that one, all right? Now, the next set are the leverage ratios. Leverage, solvency ratios. There's that idea of using debt, using other people's money to make your money. And we often use that term, leverage. We're using debt as a lever. Let's read at the bottom first, okay? Because I'm getting ahead of myself here. Debt is often referred to as leverage. The idea is that you're using other people's money to make your money. You are using the borrowed money as a lever to increase your earnings. When one firm buys another firm using borrowed money, it is often referred to as a leveraged buyout. And we will come back to this idea when we at near the end of the semester, when we discuss buying on margin, and certainly when we discuss real estate, because in real estate, this is the bread and butter of real estate investing, leverage. So, bouncing back to the top, leverage ratios are financial ratios that are used to measure the amount of debt being used to support operations and the ability of the firm to service its debt. We take a look at the debt-to-equity ratio, how many times we've earned the interest, and then the total debt to the total assets. And this times interest earned ratio, we'll find, was very, very important to Mr. Benjamin Graham, because he was always worried about bankruptcy, as I am. Slide number 35, the debt-to-equity ratio. This might look familiar because we do it on a personal basis in the Business 121 Financial Planning and Money Management class. This is a measure of the company's financial leverage calculated by dividing long-term debt by shareholders' equity. It indicates what proportion of equity and debt the company is using to finance its assets. So we take the long-term debt and divide it by the total stockholders' equity. And a higher debt-to-equity ratio generally means that a company has been aggressive in financing its growth with debt. This can result in lower earnings as a result of the additional interest expense, which we get to deduct off our income taxes, the corporation does. You can't deduct dividends. Sometimes investors only use interest-bearing long-term debt instead of total liabilities, and the lower the better, in my humble opinion, because I don't like debt. But as we said, in the car world, in the automobile world, and in real estate, this is their lifeblood. They just live and die by debt. And notice that they can also die by debt. But hey, you go through bankruptcy, it all gets wiped. Doesn't all get wiped off, but I'm getting cynical. I apologize. But yes, we have to be careful. But if you do, the long-term debt to total stockholders' equity ratio for Ford, you get a number that's almost unspeakable, almost 300%. Exactly. And we, personally, I would, you know, if I were in that situation, from a personal point of view, I'd be ready to, well, you'd probably wind up going through bankruptcy if you're an individual. But if you're a car company, hey, that's how you roll. So do that calculation and see if I'm wrong, right? Slide number 36. Now, here's the one I was talking about with Mr. Benjamin Graham. This measures the ability of a company to meet its fixed interest payments. You take the earnings before interest and taxes and divide it by the interest expense. Now, these are on the income statement. Make sure you go and find them, okay? You can find them. If not, contact me. And the times interest earned is used to determine how frequently interest payments are earned by a company during a year. The higher, the better, and normally 3 or 4 is considered adequate. So in other words, how many times during the year does Ford earn its interest expense? Because if you don't pay your interest expense, right, you're going to get hauled off in the bankruptcy court. And it turns out that I get 8.19. Make sure I get it right. You know, if I got it wrong, you better tell me quick. Find out. So in other words, about every 5-6 weeks, Ford earns the interest for the entire year. So are they in danger of being hauled into bankruptcy court? No, not anymore. Not like they were 10 years ago, right? But now, no, they're doing okay, and they can make their interest expense. And as I said, Mr. Benjamin Graham was very interested in this ratio. It was one of his most quoted ratios because he was very worried about companies disappearing, because it happens every once in a while. Yeah. And then total debt to total assets. This is a measure of how much of the company's total assets have been financed by debt. So we take the total assets and divide it by total debt to total assets, total liabilities, and divide it by the total assets. The total debt to total assets includes both short-term and long-term debt. If it varies substantially from the debt-to-equity ratio, the company may be relying heavily on short-term debt. And a heavy reliance on short-term debt can denote more risk. Why? Because it's due in the short term. But in the case of the car companies, it's actually a better measurement than the total debt-to-equity ratio. Right, because we're looking at the total assets available to the firm. And in the case of Ford, it turns out to be about 86%, which, again, in your humble professor's opinion, is way too high for an individual, in my humble opinion. But for a car company, take a look at their competitors. You tell me. And so there you are, dear students. There is our discussion of financial statements and ratio analysis. And it turns out that, yeah, it's pretty straightforward. It's not that hard. I'm going to ask you to do two companies, ask you to go through the financial ratios for two companies and do at least 12. Make sure you do two of each of the categories that we looked at. Don't just do one category. And because the first category, the market ratios, as they're called, market prospect ratios, those you just look up. And you can look up some of the others too, but some of them you have to compute on your own. And we're done. We're done the heavy lifting for our investigation into stocks. But we still have two more chapters to discuss with regard to stocks. And here is where a bit of silliness and other frivolity will creep into our discussions with regards to stocks. And so I sometimes will have a difficult time keeping a straight face and being serious when it comes to the next two chapters. But, you know, it's stuff that we really do need to cover, and realize that we need to go back over chapters 5 and 6 and study 5 and 6 over and over and over again, because that's the serious stuff. And then 17 is also very important, but that's the information that we fill in around the edges of the core information in chapters 5 and 6. Okay? So we'll see you in our next chapter on stock price behavior and market efficiency. Thank you very much for your excellent effort and attention, dear students. We are really proud of you, and we want you to be awesome. We want you to be the best stock pickers the world has ever seen. Yeah,